You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. That's why he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hi, my name is Wendy M. Koch, and I'm the author of A Gray Resort and my newest book, An Awakening, that just came out this past January. And you're listening to Ghosts in the Valley with Al Cooley.
I'm excited today to have Mark Elliott Foltz on the show. He comes highly recommended by Sin Schrader Hill, Austin Lawrence, Eric Freeman Sims, Daniel Cahoon. I mean, the list goes on. I've had these people on my show, and I said, you got to have Mark Elliott Foltz on the show. You got to have him on. And then, and then Sin Schrader Hill told me about the cookbook. You know, I'm like, we got to get in that cookbook, you know.
Hell yeah.
But, you know, I get down here that you're a psychic medium. An author, a psychic medium, metaphysician, reader. I can't even say that.
It's a lot.
what is a metaphysician reader?
Well, let me tell you, the best way to put it, because I'm a psychic, which everyone has that ability. It's part of human nature. It's part of our electromagnetic field. Which is created by our pineal gland, which has magnetite in it and creates our electromagnetic field because of the functioning of the body. And I was murdered 33 years ago and came back from it. And that tended to, when your body goes through major traumas, you get it overcompensates a little sometimes for when you come back. So when I came back from that, I had been psychic before, but then it was increased, and I got into metaphysics very heavily and began really, I'd been studying for years before that, but when I came back, then I just had a different approach and was hooked up a little differently, which happens to people when, you dropped on your head and talked to the dead kind of thing. And a metaphysician, I speak ghost because I started working in metaphysical stores, started doing readings, started doing seancing. I'm really kind of like an old spiritualist in a way. I started off in metaphysics as a Wiccan and then moved into the witch category because witchcraft is just the being able to do the functions, learning how to deal with energy and how to put those together and get a result. It's not the Christian witch kind of thing. It's just an earth-based person. And so I do channeling. I love to do channeling. People approach me about talking to their dead people, and I talk to them, and I'm actually provable. You know, I'm getting a good amount of evidence behind me to show people how it works. And it's not so much woo-woo as understanding your system. We're an ancient being that functions within an electromagnetic field. And I'm just a technician in that. That human experience is older than science.
Yeah.
So, but they poo-poo our human experience. But, you know, in the old days, magic was science, you know, because it is basically alchemy is just, you know, taking this chemical, you know, and it's just understanding ourselves within the framework of the universe and the earth and how it functions. And the earth is a living being. And so we are, you know, just energy within energy within energy. So that's what I do. And then, but I do it with a Southern drawl.
Yeah.
I'm from Chattanooga, Tennessee. I'm 63, and I just, you know, when you deal with all this stuff all the time and everybody coming to you with all the sad things you have to deal with. And I thought, I'm just going to start kicking up some dust and having fun. And I've gotten involved in some ghost hunting. I wanted to do ghost hunting and got involved into that with, which is how I got connected with Austin Lawrence through Sense Rider Hill and Eric Sims. Found out that doing ghost hunting by Zoom turned me into basically a frequency. I was projecting. I know how to remote view. And
that was one of my questions is how do you use your gifts through social media?
I do a lot of projection and remote viewing, which before I will tell people, don't tell me anything. Let me show you. And then I'll draw out the place they're looking at. They'll know all what they're doing. I don't know what they're doing. And a lot of times I'll go, I don't know what the hell that is, but here it is. And I give it to them. And I'll draw out the buildings. I will draw out the energy spots. Because the government has studied remote viewing before, where it's just part of our human nature. What it is you're using your electromagnetic field to go into the bigger electromagnetic field. And so if you project yourself and know how to do that, then it's not that bad, that hard. Mm-hmm. And if you're projecting yourself, say like I'm talking to you, but if I were looking into your room energetically, then that turns me into a frequent. My frequency is just projecting there. I'm not physically there. I'm just as energy. And we started finding out that it turned my skill, because about a year and a half ago, I have several disabilities. So I had had just finished up 9 days of hiccups.
Oh, wow. 'Cause
I have connective tissue issues that sometimes will do that. It kicks that in. And at the very end of it, I passed out. And I passed out and landed on the tub on my neck. And it put me in terrible pain for 6 months. But after I got past the pain, it had kicked my abilities up a little bit more. You know, it's that kind of thing, kicked in the head, you know, or dropped on my head, talked to the dead. And so anytime anything's happened, it's kicked it up a little bit, a notch. So my abilities started getting really good. So it's been very interesting. You know, I mean, I've been isolated a lot because of metaphysics in a way, because here, like in Chattanooga, where I lived out in the country. And in Chattanooga, you really can't do what I'm doing. Because it's so very Christian, Bible Belt.
Oh, yeah.
And then I moved here, and there is a more openness. There's a lot of psychics and a lot of readings and a lot of things going on. But the ghost hunting thing is very cliquish. So I started doing the thing of doing Zoom with people and doing that. And it's been interesting. But, you know, I've had to learn a lot about ghost hunters and how I'm going to be working in the future, you know, so, but I've had a good time doing it. I think we've had, we found some really interesting evidence. And
when you're doing like the ghost hunting, yeah. Do they call you in just, or I'm saying they, I mean,
whoever the host is,
you're not talking about using like, spirit boxes or stuff like you use your psychic abilities.
I am my spirit box.
The other extra tool they need.
The extra tool. And what I do is I tell them, don't tell me anything.
Okay, you don't know. You want to open slate. Okay.
So when I go in, if I'm going to fall on my big fat psychic derriere, I'm just going to fall in. But I haven't. You know, which is the lucky. But I will draw out the remotes. I will let them see all that stuff. I won't let them tell me stuff. And then, you know, of course, I'm wanting to find out what's going on, you know, but it takes a while for once we do the investigation, then they can tell me. But I will ask them if they understand what I'm talking about. And 100% lately, it's been, you know, totally, you know, it's not a no brainer. So, but I try to keep it where I don't know what it is, where it is, how it is. They just, if they're doing, I'll say, you know, we'll set a time. They call me. Then I begin, I'll tell them beforehand, show many pictures I've drawn. Cause like with one with Austin Lawrence, on a place that he goes to, there was a hidden cemetery. They'd raised money, hired this person to come out. I keep calling it Sonic because I'm old, but using radar to find graves.
Mm-hmm.
And it's on a huge property. And they got kind of scared that they wouldn't be able to, that, you know, well, he's come all this way and we've paid all this money, you know, let's call Mark and see if he can help us. So I drew a map that the spirits there showed me. And I drew out the buildings without knowing what the buildings were and drew a map, which I have, and drew where the graves were. Well, when the guy got there a couple of days later, he said, well, before I start, is there anything you want to tell me? And they said, well, you know, for what it's worth, here, this psychic, you know, we asked him, and this is a map he drew, and within 2 seconds, he found graves exactly where I was showing. And it's right now they've found over 200 graves.
Wow.
And then I helped find 3 other graves of someone associated with that property elsewhere. And they couldn't find those, and I led them to that. And so I'm finding out I'm good at the grave finding at this age, you know, because I'll draw pictures, I'll paint pictures, I'll paint paintings of the spirits if I can see them or draw them. And I'm an artist. I draw anywhere from very loosely done artwork to very complicated Art Nouveau pen and ink. You know, things that I used to do. It was not uncommon when I was recovering from being attacked for me to put 60 to 100 hours into a piece of art, you know, just like a little sewing machine, but it was my therapy. So now I do very loose all the way to very compact. So I can draw what I'm seeing. And it's turned out to be pretty shocking, you know. So, and actually there's been times when I've given people evidence and then we find out, you know, they'll show me a picture of what I did and what they found. It's shocking to me.
I was going to say, does it even shock yourself? You know,
Please. I'm like,
Wow.
Yeah. How did that happen?
Yeah. Was that me? You know, did that?
Yeah. I mean, I have had moments where it's like, damn, you know, so I'm very lucky, you know, I mean, but I'm also, because I am a metaphysician, I'm a trained third degree metaphysician. The combination of having the abilities along with structure and discipline has made it where, you know, I have the talent. It's like being an artist, you know, you have the talent. You just have to be able to focus it. And right now with Sin Schroeder Hill, I'm working on a book called The Psychic Worm Stitch.
Oh, okay.
That I explain how I think it all works and things you can do to dig into it if you want to dig into it. in your own way, you know. But the thing I don't suggest is, you know, I can't be murdered or anything, you know, but if you get murdered and come back from it, you know, it's at least something positive comes out of it. Or if you have a major accident or you're hit, you know, and it usually happens when people really get hit in the head. Mm-hmm. And because what it does is it shifts all that magnetite that is in the pineal gland. When it does that, that changes your electromagnetic field. And then you're projecting into the bigger field. And if it shifts it, then it just becomes a whole different kettle of fish. So people who have gone through traumas, that's why people who've died and come back or had traumas sometimes come back with the extra gift, you know. But then you have to know what to do with it. If you don't, then it will just happen to you normally, and you'll say, well, I don't know why I'm seeing this, but, you know, or seeing it in surrealistic imagery, which is really weird, you know, but I see things sometimes very, it's like, because if it's going into the cerebellum, the deep subconscious of your brain, which is back here, which you access through the pineal stalk, it's the level where people in the 60s.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Would take LSD to have all this color and expansion. And it's that level.
I get that when I take NyQuil.
Yeah. You know, some people have it just, you know, normally. And, but in my day, when I was young, you know, they were dropping some, you know, chemicals made at labs, you know, and going, here, try this, which I had never had. But I mean, when I was young, I knew people who were dropping acid and stuff and LSD, and it would get them to that level, but then they become addicted to the drug, mm-hmm. and that would take away the expansion. So I'm going to be teaching people how to get into that level through meditation, so that if you get into your, that way you don't need to take all these drugs and mushrooms and shrooms and say to get to something that you need to learn the process. Because if you take a drug, then you're not learning how to get there on your own. You'll mm-hmm. have to take the drug to get to it. And so I try to teach people how to get to the, how to create their own path to it. So then they have control of the result. I mean, you know, they have control of the tools.
Yeah, you had talked about, you know, a little bit ago, Earth Witch.
Yeah.
I had a guest on a while back. I don't. You may even know her, Haley Stack.
I've met Haley.
Have you? Okay, because she. I always find her interesting too. Mm-hmm. Is because I think she does stuff with the shrine. You're a shrine.
Oh yeah, I know where it is. I've been there.
And I get back to like the Native American Indian. You know, how they everything is with the earth, with the ground, with the energy. And all these, everything has a spirit with a living thing, plant, trees, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. So I was always fascinated with that. And I always love when I have psychic mediums come on my show because, and you answer that one question, you know, that you like to go in with not knowing anything about it. So you can draw your own picture and of that maybe not what everything's told about, like say, Lizzie Borden, you know. You know, we've heard that story 1,000 times. You might hear something. Yeah. You might come something that's totally off the walls, off the chain, different, you know? Yeah, I love that. I just love that about you say we have that gift. I don't know if I, you know, I know I'm more of a empath, right? I can sense sure. I can sense a spirit, and because I grew up in a haunted house, so I sure. know I knew what the what was there back in the day in the 60s. We didn't have social media, so
no.
So who do you go to with your problem or with your that's bothering, like a spirit or yeah. you know they're gonna lock your butt up. So we were talking about Austin Lawrence. I want to get that for a second. I did watch this one show. It's with the abandoned military base.
Missile base.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I think was it you that he was talking to on the phone when it came to the part with the clown?
Yeah,
Mark. So I don't know if that was you.
That was me.
Okay, because he was a guy like dumbfounded that this place doesn't have any power, but this freaking clown was like
coming off.
Talking with him, you know, he said, well, we maybe check about for a battery pack.
Yeah.
You know,
well, and see, because the owner was doing some things, you know, it tainted his experience in a way, because he wouldn't believe, you know, because that was my first time, I think, working with him, and he didn't believe in psychics, you know, at the time, and with it being electronic and all that stuff, you know, with batteries and all that. But he wasn't willing to listen to, you know, the psychic, you know, saying, well, you know, it's actual, you know, but I proved myself later on.
I know he said you opened his eyes up. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, but he's very not psychic centered, you know, which a lot of ghost hunters aren't.
Yeah.
And two, it's hard to find a psychic who can get themselves out of a wet paper bag.
You're right.
Because I have plenty of friends who've been psychic and stuff. And then, you know, then I've worked with people that, oh, my Lord, you know, because I know several that, you know, do great jobs. And then I know some that it's like, oh, my God, I need a drink. If I have to sit here and listen, because I worked in a place where there was a woman who worked in that, I thought, no, you did not just say that to that person. And they had a psychology diploma, and they used psychological tricks to get the reading out of the person. And that really made me more determined. You know, she wasn't using her real skills. She was using tactics to get the person to tell them their story, and then they took the story, and the person didn't realize they had just given them all of the details to sew it together. And so that's why when I go into something, I say, nope, 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 nope. You cannot tell me anything. You cannot show me anything. Let me go in. And actually with the shrine, which I can't talk a whole lot about right now, but because the show has still not been coming out. But before I got there, I had come up with a list. I had drawn the place. I had no idea what this place was. As a matter of fact, when we got there, we didn't get the address until we got in town. And by the time we got there, you know, I'd already gone through telling Austin, Lydia, Sin, all the information, and they were wanting to tell me stuff so bad. And when I got there, I didn't know any of these people. And I was saying, before I went in, we met, and then I made them go back outside the gate with me. And I told them things I was seeing, and they got, their eyes got like this. They ran in, got the owner, and came back, and they were really surprised. So, which was fun. It was an interesting place. It's not always what I would be drawn to, but there was a lot of very interesting things there. Things you don't see just normally every day. So, but it shocked them very badly in a way. And they were like, oh, you found it. Come on in. And then, yeah. You know, when I was going, you know, this, that, you know, well, and it was very funny.
Have you ever had something come to you that was so disturbing that it bothered you? You know?
Oh, yeah. Oh, God. Oh, God. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not too long ago.
Okay.
One place I went. The energy from the place that I was going to. Because mostly what happens when you're doing ghost hunting is you're not dealing with, you know, ghosts and energies and spirits are a different thing than other elemental or ancient functioning spirits that come from old religions and things like that. I did deal with an energy that was in a place that, you know, I was approaching it from, I try not to let other people tell me stuff. So I don't want to go by their description of it. I have to see it for myself and I have to assess what I think it is for me, for what I'm doing. And the energy was this very dark, earthy energy that's been around a long time. And it projected itself to me and to other people that were going to go and investigate. And it approached me in a, all the rest of them, it approached them in a friendly way. It approached me in a threatening way. And I actually attacked it because I was like, oh my, you know, so, but I didn't realize it was just the whole place it came from is like a energy trap. And so so when I got to go, it was interesting. It was very interesting.
We just talked about that the other night with another guest. So she was talking about trapped energy, a trap, like when you have a spirit that's trapped.
I mean, an energy trap. When you, as a person, go into it, it's using your energy.
Okay.
So you're feeding something that you don't know consciously that you're feeding. It was very interesting, but I couldn't wait to get back home, you know, and jump in a bath of bleach water and go.
Yeah, right.
You know, but it was interesting. I mean, it was interesting. It's stuff that I hadn't seen 40 years, you know, 35, 40 years, and not so concentrated. So it was very interesting. It's like, you know, but you as a energy technician, you know, your energy field, your aura, my aura was around me like a condom. It was like, do not touch anything,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Just look, you know.
Your force field, yeah.
Yeah, and then when I do channeling and things like that, since I've been doing it for decades, I have basically a Teflon coating on what we call the shallow, which is your solar plexus. And so when I channel, I can channel very caustic stuff sometimes, but it's not attaching to me. It's in a Teflon coating. And then when I'm finished, I can, you know, get rid of it. A lot of people who do channeling don't know how to do that. And then they just infect themselves.
Hmm.
So it's just, you know, time, training, and being an old witch bitch.
I want to switch gears here. I want to get to this cookbook, okay? Because this is something since Raider Hill said she worked her butt off.
Yes.
And I think I've seen you on another show and you're talking about that, you know, like you don't want to give her another recipe. Like I know you had like have I don't have down here how many recipes, but I have down here it's 1,141 pages, and she showed me the book when I had her on the show. I was like, oh my God, you know, and she says, I want to get into this. It's called My Mean Old Grandma's Good Old Cookbook.
Yes.
Mean old grandma was a mean old grandma.
She was a bitch. No, she was a bitch.
Okay.
My grandmother, my father's mother, her family, her father was adopted Apaches. So her uncles, her dad, and they were all of her sisters and brothers were raised on a farm in Texas and basically like slave labor. And she was a road hard, mean old bitch. Now she was raised from the age of 7. What they would do with the girls is they'd put them up at the counter. You'd start making biscuits and then you would, you know, work into being the main cook for the field hands. And she was a Edwardian cook, you know, and she cooked with lard and made fresh cakes, fabulous chicken.
Stuff that they would never even give you today in today's
oh, you know, for some people, they think lard is bitter. I'm kind of like, I feel sorry for pigs because I like pigs. So I feel, conflicted that I'm showing, you know, doing this, but, you know, it's being done anywhere. It's there. I mean, you know, before it's over, I'll probably be a vegetarian.
Are you a vegetarian?
Hell no. Okay. I was raised by these Texan-based people. I was raised from a toddler. They would start you on steak. And there was meat with every meal.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I try not to eat meat, then I have withdrawals, mental withdrawals or whatever. So I've got to work on that. But when she died, she would never share a recipe with anybody. If she did, she would make sure she gave you wrong ingredients in it. So it turned out like crap. And she did that to my sister-in-law.
Wow.
2 times. And I said, you went back twice because she would cook them. And it was before the internet, but she would not give you a recipe. Her recipe book, if she had thought about it, she would have burned them before she died. But I got them because nobody else was interested in them. And when I opened the box and saw a recipe, I'd said this to someone else a while back. I said, I saw a recipe for a flaming peach cake. And I went, I can relate to this. And I thought, so I got addicted to recipes in 97. And I've been putting this book together all this time. And then when we started doing it, you know, me and Sin, you know, we do books. We were like, let's do a cookbook. Let's do this. This is going to be easy.
Yeah. She said, it's a cookbook. It's not going to be that hard. And so she goes, oh my God.
Oh my God. It was like birth for both of us. And then I was doing all the pretty recipes. And then my grandmother, when you would go over to their house, they were raised on the farms in Texas. So their comfort food were things like brains and eggs, snouts, whatever, you know, anything. A lot of people go, ugh. But their stuff was the guts and the stuff, you know, they thought it was delicious. I didn't ask what was on the stove if I went over to have to pick up something for my mother because, you know, they might tell me. And I thought, well, all of that stuff, I said, what we'll do is the...
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Pretty recipes, because at first I was just going to do the pretty recipes and do the pretty cakes and the pretty little pies and the pretty little... And then I thought, well, her sister was a bigger bitch.
That's where you came to the pretty sisters and the ugly sisters?
Ugly sisters. And then it was the ugly sister ones. If you're sensitive, you don't look. But some of that stuff is actually in fancy restaurants, you know, in other places. It's just that in that day, that's just what you ate. You didn't waste anything.
I was going to say, there's nothing on that animal that they threw away.
You know, when it became the ugly sister one, then it's like, and then the more I dug and the more I kept going and the more I kept going, then it got more and more recipes. And then we couldn't, it was just finally when it was over, I know she was ready to kill me. When it was over, it's as big as an old fashioned phone book.
Yeah, she showed me. I was impressed, man.
I was shocked.
I've never seen a cookbook that big.
I've never seen one that big either. And I went, oh my gosh. And then we didn't put pictures of me cooking food because my food tastes good, sometimes great, but it looks like crap. So what I'm going to do is when I do my Fat Psychic cooking show, I'm going to have other people who cook the dishes and send in pictures, then every month I'll have a video and show all of the people who send in the pictures of the food that they cooked. Because there are some things I make that, oh, they're so damn good, but they look like cock-a-doo-doo. Yeah. And there's nothing I can do for them. And because I'm not interested in it being beautiful. I'm interested in it. I just don't have that flair, but other people do. But I had so much fun doing it and researching it.
Of course, there's some food you can eat that if you knew what it was, you wouldn't eat it. But you know what a mountain oyster is, right?
Ooh.
I had that at work where a gentleman I work with says, you know, he made the best mountain oysters in the state. I'm like, oh, okay. And then after I ate, I threw up.
Yeah.
That's what I found out what it was.
I worked in a place where there's a guy who used to be a butcher. And so he liked my cooking when I worked there. And as a matter of fact, he started insisting on it on Saturdays. So, and if the other people didn't feed him, he would go ballistic. One time he wanted a turkey. So I cooked him a turkey. I'd never cooked one before. And I will say I did the whole trimmings. I mean, the whole spread. I brought it in just for him. And by the time I came in the door, he was clawing the chicken and, you know, doing this. And it was because he hadn't had home cooked food in a long time. There were just scraps left and they were in a bowl in the refrigerator in the kitchen in the store. And one of the young workers was going to throw it away and they threw it in the garbage. And I heard the worst cussing out I've heard in years. And I said, what on earth? And he found out he had thrown it in the garbage. He was reaching in the garbage. Doing this. And I was like, damn. And he's like, so I asked him when I do my show, I said, I will be cooking nasty stuff. Do you want it? And he goes, I will eat the snouts. I will eat the testicles. I will eat the brains. I will eat the gonad. I will eat. You just make it. You bring it. And I will. And because there's some of that crap. If I cook it, it ain't going in this mouth.
Do you ever think about what's in your cookbook? Like, what says, let's pick out just a certain recipe. Out of what? How many? So there was like 1,700. I mean, how many's in the cookbook?
Oh, it's close to 1,700. It's like 16.
So you pick one of those out, you know?
And, yeah.
Can you imagine somebody out there that bought your book is going to make that recipe?
I mean, there's, and I want to know what they do when they do it, because there are some of them that are beautiful. I put in things that were, they sound achingly beautiful. Mm-hmm. Most of them have to do with violets.
Okay.
And violet paste that they used to make. And I mean, Victorian, beautiful, Victorian, you know, like peanut brittle. I've had to talk about this before because I think it sounds beautiful, but like peanut brittle, except it's like white sugar brittle with violets in it that you bake for 10 days.
Sounds good.
And it's from the 1800s. It sounds exquisite. And at the end of the 10 days, you break the end, drain out whatever fluids on the inside, dry it out 10 more minutes, and then it's this beautiful violet candy. And then the nastiest stuff, you know, is like, oh my God. There were things we would talk about that it would just make me nauseous. There was one or two things I just couldn't put in. I just can't. I can't even bring myself to read it or to write it, to think that there's, you know, things like bloater's paste. I think Sin, that's one of her things. She's just so grossed out at the idea of bloater's paste, which it's herrings, but they say to make it gamier, you put in the guts and the bones and you grind it up. And she's like, oh.
What was it? You said you was on another podcast, I think, and I can't remember, but it was something with, I don't know if your grandmother made you eat this. It had fur on it.
Oh, yeah. She was, because there were four of us kids in the family, and she only wanted my mother to have my first brother, and she didn't want the rest of us. She just wanted him. So they let her pick favorites. And so she would lure him over with, I mean, there was a refrigerator there that it was stocked to the roof with treats just to lure him over, I guess. And, but she didn't want to, you know, she would bring things over and say, these are for Davy. Don't touch them. And we would just, you know, as soon as she'd leave, you know, because he would turn green. She fed him so many fried apple pies and fried chicken, he turns green if you say fried apple pie. Now, those fried apple pies were freaking delicious. I know because I got to try them at least a few times in my life by accident, because believe me, but she wanted time with him alone. And I was about six, and I made the mistake, because my other brother would go with him sometimes, and she would chase him off. But I made the mistake. I didn't know all that stuff, and I went over. And so she wanted to teach me not to do that. And so she had a rabbit fur, with the still, that was frozen. And she cooked that up for me, said, "You sit right here. I'm cooking you something special." And it had fur in it. It was made with, she was an evil little bitch. Had it with the mashed potatoes and the other things because she had made things for David. And when she found out I was coming, she fixed this rabbit. And she knew I was terrified of adults for good reason. And so she said, "You sit there and you eat it all." Okay. And I had to eat all the rabbit with the hair and stuff in it. And it was 10 years old. That taught me. I did not go back for seconds on that one. I would only go over if I had to my mother would send me over to get something or whatever. She was horrible.
Yeah, that just strikes me. In my book, my grandmother was my biggest advocate growing up in this house. And she made this. I know you're talking about how these old recipes and what's passed down through generations and... And she had all these superstition stuff that, went on till the day she died. And I had this terrible flu, and she had me drink this stuff called, and she made it up. I don't know what was always in it, but it's called blue tea. And it actually, if you held up to light, looked blue. For Hank Blue, like from the South, for warding off evil spirits. And anyway, I drank this tea, and it's like you're saying, I felt like I was on LSD floating around the room. And I don't know what was in it, but... It took, she said it'll cure any virus. And it did. I was fine. I had a flu, man. About 3 hours later, I'm fine. No sneezing, no coughing, no sniffling, no fever. But she did a lot of things with like black molasses, blackstrap molasses. And,
oh, yeah.
That stuff tastes like crap, And
it tastes like crap. And yeah. It is, but boy, it's been used in a lot of medicine.
So a lot of stuff she made, you're talking about making a turkey dinner. Everything is that comes out of that turkey, like the gizzard and the heart, everything is in there. She that's what she made her stuffing out of. If you ate it, it was delicious. But knowing
if you knew,
I think a lot of it's up here.
Yeah, because the modern eye to us is like, but we're eating body parts. Mm-hmm. We're already eating something. It didn't fall. It did not sacrifice itself and come to the table and get on our plate. It had to be. It was killed. It was processed. And to us, it's one thing to eat a piece of the flank or to eat a steak, than to say, well, you're moving up 8 inches to the brain, to the eyes. To us, we go, oh, heavens to Betsy. But we're eating stuff that, we're eating a dead body, already. But it's just the way we think about it. But back then, they just, they cooked everything but the oink. And then they took the oink and put it in something else. Right. And then you spread that on crackers and ate it,
Yeah, a couple years ago, I went to the West Virginia Roadkill Festival.
Oh, no.
you would think that, oh no, and it's that. Oh. But actually it wasn't what you would, like a dead possum with cinders on the side of the road.
Yeah.
These are actually what they called roadkill. It'd be like rabbit, possum or whatever, get, and they would fillet it up, and it was a really good garnished dishes. But my brother-in-law, man, is like, I'm not eating any of that shit. I'm not going to touch it. Yeah. I'm not even going to look at it, I think just the name of the festival, Roadkill Festival.
Yeah.
But it was actually a little more.
That title just absolutely shuts it off for me. And it's like, hell to the no. And on duty, there was somebody who they had hit a deer with her sister's truck and she cooked it. And the woman called it, and she offered it to her sister And she said, I don't want no rigor mortis stew. And it's like, she goes, yeah, it wasn't rigor mortis. Yeah. It was, it, but, you know, and she took it home and cleaned it and cooked it.
I remember as a kid, I brought a big turtle in from the, from out, you know, you're playing out in the yard and this big, I don't know if it was a snapping turtle. It was just a huge turtle. I brought it in the house and my dad, and I was going to, actually, I was taking it in to be a pet. What kind of cage can I put this whole thing in and as my pet? You know, next thing I know, it's in my dad's pot on the stove. He's cooking it up for a turtle soup.
Oh my God.
And I don't know if that's in your book or not.
No, I think I have mock turtle soup, which is made with chicken livers.
I mean, I'm planning on getting that book, you know, because I think it's going to be a good book for a coffee table feast.
It's turned out to be a very good book.
Yeah, you got into what, ebook, paperback, and hardback, it's, right? Yeah.
Yes. If you get the ebook, or Kindle, it's like it just goes on and on and on because it's in a different format.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm very proud of it. I mean, we're very shocked from my era. I'm a book crazy person. I love magazines and books, and I want to have my books, you know, where I can read them. But like I said, the first one, when I ordered one, I was like, holy mother of pearl. This thing is, you know, you can sit on it to drive, you know, to get you up to the stairwell. And when you were saying the thing about blue tea, something in the old days, what they would do is also sheep nettle tea, which is sheep urine. They would make you drink for like measles and things like that.
I sure hope the hell that wasn't.
It's like, although you would know.
It was terrible. It was actually, I still remember, because I remember my uncle saying this to me back then. He says, don't drink that because it tastes like shit. And I still have that ring in my head. And I'm thinking to myself, he says, the best thing to do is just to gulp it down. Don't sit there and sip it. So dummy me, you're taking hot tea and you gulp it, you know. And my grandma says, I've never seen anybody do that before. But
well, you know, helps it get down quicker.
But you know, the difference between I had a nice grandmother that was my best friend, basically. And I just cracked up when I seen that. Your old grandma was a mean old grumpy bitch.
Bitch. And she grew up.
I just, you know, I hate to call her that.
Mean old boy who was her son, who was my father. He was awful.
But what you're saying is it's kind of, she has to be the way she treated you, you know.
And who knows what his life was like with that old woman.
What you mean, Dad?
Yeah, my father was just terrible. Was he? But he was like, he was 6'4". He was like, the Apache, her father and them were Apache. He was really like an Apache. And, you know, I mean, when I was a kid, if your tooth was loose or sort of, he loved to pull people's teeth. And so you had to not let him know because he would pull it ready or not. He'd pull it. My arms would come out of place and he thought he would save some money and reset my shoulder when I was 6, which caused more damage. And, you know, they would just, you know, if it offended, they'd cut it off. They would chew it off. You know, they were just special. But, and his father was the sweetest, kindest little farmer you'd ever met. But one thing it makes me think of my oldest brother in that house, and people from my era would probably know this. If you ever had a problem as a kid, you didn't want them to know because it would get announced. You'd hear them on that, you know, on the telephone going, well, Damien is constipated. What do I need to do? So they had called my grandparents. And so my grandfather came over with this horrid, chalky white bottle of something. I don't remember what it's called, but it was horrible looking. And he had a big army spoon, and he didn't bother to read the instructions. And he took this big spoon, and they were all standing around watching, you know, and I thought, well, you know. And they gave him this huge spoonful, and my brother's sitting there going, oh, oh, oh. And my grandfather looks at it and goes, oh, dissolve in 8 ounces of water. And so, you know, and he was sitting there going, ah, ah, ah. I said, I think that'll fix his constipation. But they, you know, you would hear them on the phone talking about this stuff. And then, but grandma and grandpa would come over with their remedies, you know. So it's like you didn't want to go over and know what they were eating. You didn't, if they brought stuff to Thanksgiving or Christmas, it was pretty safe. For a while, we were eating supper, Sunday dinner with her for in the set up until like 1973. Fantastic food, but she would never eat anyone else's food. She would sit there and drink. She would pour her coffee into a saucer and drink it and look at you with these evil eyes over the rim of the saucer. And she would never drink or touch or try anyone else's food. Wow. And there is no telling what she did to that food for us. You know, I mean, thank God I was young and just didn't know. I was going, wow, that's pretty damn good.
You'd think that if your grandma knew you had a cookbook out and now named after her.
Oh, well, she I was born on the old bitch's birthday. My mother was pregnant with me, she's going, I wouldn't hurt my ass having that kid. And then I was born on her birthday.
Yeah.
And which that did not thrill her.
Oh, definitely. Probably not.
You know, but at the end of it, I mean, what she would do such, but when she died, she knew my mother, who took care of her the last year of her life, fed her, took care of her, triggered her nicely, you know, took care of her. She knew my grandfather had left my mother aged cedar chest. So when my grandmother died, mom went, opened up the cedar chest, and on top was all these pictures of my mother, who was quite a beauty when she was young. I mean, he looked like Boris Karloff, but my mother looked very pretty. On top of everything nicely folded and whatever in there, there were these pictures of my mother that she had poked at her face, eyes, and drawn at her face, and had pictures of my sister she had tore up and had it all there nicely packed, waiting for her. And so it was funny. Wow. It was my mother and me, we just died laughing because she was just mean to the last drop. And she did, but she would just do anything she could. Some of the stuff she did was funny. And then there were some things she did that were psychotic. And before we did the book, I had written out really their story, their family history. And I said, because we were so tired, we were just drunk, punch drunk, tired. And I said, we need to have someone look at this before I put this story in. And so she had a friend read it, and the friend freaked out so badly. I went, I think we'll make it a Disney version. And so you get the Disney version. The real version, you can't handle it. You can't handle the truth, you know, because they were just bananas. And I don't see how any of them made it to being adults. And I'm surprised I made it to being an adult.
It's on my wish list to get that book. I mean, that's going to go on my table, my coffee table, because I.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I think it'll be funny. It's but the cooking show should be very funny.
When's that going to come out? When's that coming out?
Oh, I'm working on it.
You're working on it.
And when you're a poor person, you have to do it as you can. But now all the elements are coming together at the right time. So, and I had someone do my horoscope, and it's pretty tremendous. So I think it's going to be fun.
I'm going to put your links in the bottom of this episode, and I really appreciate you coming on the show, and I'll have you back on after this cooking show comes out. And I know you're working on another book. We'll talk about that one as well. And, where can I get a hold of your books? On Amazon, or do you have your own website, or?
I am getting ready to do a website. If they look on Amazon and just look up Mark Fultz, FULTS, you'll find I did a book, a thing of Chattanooga Chills ghost stories. There's a ghost tour online that I did from when I lived there. And in all the books I've done with Sin, Trader Hill, and Teal Gray, and Sin and I've got several books together.
You have one down here. I have on my list. Dolls.
Yeah. Oh Lord.
That's on my list. Yeah. That was on my list because I was always been interested in dolls, haunted dolls.
So, well, I have some haunted ones that are really cool. But I have one. It's missing part of its face, but it was a post-mortem doll that was made by the funeral home for the mothers to get over the mourning of their children. And it has the consciousness of the mother holding it and loving it. So when it's from 1880s, wax doll, has the plaster inside it. to wait it, give it weight. And, but when it's activated, its eyes turn from very gray to very blue. It wants to be held by someone that's upset, and it makes them feel better if they hold it. So it's actually a sweet one, but it's scary looking. It scares the hell out of people.
I kept thinking, I'm so fascinated with some of these haunted dolls, like Robert the Doll.
Yeah.
That was on my list too, to go see Robert.
Yeah, I would love to see Robert. There's actually one that I experienced not too long ago that it's a vessel, but it's a vessel for something else, you know. And the person, one of the people with us was like, I want to take it home with me. And I was like, no,
yeah.
You know, because it would have not ended well.
Yeah.
But there are quite a bit of haunted dolls that have consciousness that are okay to have. But there's one I've watched on a video that, oh my God, it's freaky. The guy records it and he'll ask it questions. And then when he plays back the recording, you hear screaming and weird things. And it's like, I thought, I've had one that I had to send on to another home because it wasn't mine. It was dropped on me and it hated the person who dropped it on me. And I thought, no, because I moved from a place when I parted ways with this person. They had put it in our basement and I moved 50 miles away. And 3 days later on my back porch that was locked on a screen porch, here sat that damn doll. And it was so mean. I was like, nope. I'm not going to sleep here with my one eye open while you wander around my house. So I found it a home and it left me alone. I was like, nope.
Well, that one was on my list and that cookbook, you know. But I want to thank you for coming on the show, and I'll put your links down there, and I'll have you back on again later, man. I enjoyed it.
All right, well, thank you so much. It's been fun, and Sin has talked so highly of you, and you're very, very nice, sweet man. If they want to look at my stuff, just look me up on Facebook under Mark Fultz or on Amazon. You know, I'm going to try and have my website up within a few weeks, and it'll be easier to find me.
Mark Elliott Fultz. Remember that name, and go to Amazon, pick up his new cookbook, My Mean Old Grandma's Old Cookbook. I'm telling you what, to me, it's going to be a great coffee table book. I've never seen a cookbook quite like this. And while you're there, pick up his other books. He's got a nice selection to choose from. I'm going to put Mark's links at the bottom of this episode. And when his cooking show comes out, I'm going to have him back on. We're going to talk about the cooking show. We're going to talk about his other book coming out, Mark Elliott Fultz. Thank you, man. It was my privilege to have you on the show. I'm your host, Al Cooley. I'll be back with another great episode of Ghost in the Valley podcast.
Is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Also that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.